Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Party News, the show on the Nerd Party where we talk about the news. I'm Mike.
I'm Lance.
And it is 1:02 p.m. Central Time on February 14th, 2021, which means it's been 1 week and 32 minutes since I've had any caffeine. It's kind of crazy. This could be an interesting show. We'll see how it goes. Let's get into some of this here news. Now, last week, right after we recorded, well, a few hours after we recorded, was the Super Bowl. How do you feel about Tom Brady winning his seventh title?
I don't like it, but I don't mind it because I kind of expected it. So, like I said, you know, last week, it's like, this is what he does. Like, it wouldn't shock me that if he won. And I thought that, like, I didn't want it to happen, but that's what I thought would happen, and that's what happened.
Yeah, I wasn't too happy about it either, but I think I was kind of less happy about the fact that the game was pretty boring.
It was, and, you know, Kansas City, they were taken out of their game by a couple of things. Number one, the officials in the first half.
Yeah.
And also, like, their game plan, it was just trash. Like, and they made no adjustments. They didn't run the ball, and they couldn't protect Mahomes. So, you know, all that spelled disaster.
Yeah. But at least we got some commercials out of it, right?
We did.
Yeah. And, I mean, one of the commercials which you were telling me about but before the game was the Amazon commercial with Michael B. Jordan.
Alexa.
For Alexa.
Yeah.
And that was pretty great, I have to say. But, you know, in there, what they kind of snuck in there was, you know, like a bus with a big billboard on it.
His new movie, yeah.
Yeah, Without Remorse, which is a movie which was supposed to come out from Paramount, like in September. Like, they were all set. Like, I was, like, the first thing that I didn't get to do because of the pandemic was go to Vegas for CinemaCon, which is the big, like, exhibitor screen exhibitor, you know, showcase. And, you know, they were going to have Michael B. Jordan there as, like, the guest of honor, you know, doing, like,
awesome.
And, you know, everyone just assumed they were going to make their big launch with Without Remorse, you know, show the first trailer and everything. And then, you know, like, 2 weeks before that, the world
stopped.
Collapsed.
Yeah.
And we still have not seen a trailer for Without Remorse, but now we do have a release date finally.
Okay.
It's coming to Prime on April 30th.
Okay, cool.
And I, you know, it makes sense that Amazon would buy this because, for one thing, I mean, I think they probably sold it. Paramount probably sold it before Paramount Plus was, you know, kind of
a thing.
But also, you know, Prime is the channel that has Jack Ryan on it. So it just kind of fits because theoretically, I mean, the books at least are in the same continuity. Did you watch Jack Ryan?
I have watched it.
I've only seen season one so far.
That's the one I've seen. Okay. season one, but I have watched season one.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, but I mean, I need to get to season two for no, it's not like it's, you know. But I'm wondering now if, like, maybe they'll try to tie them together because...
Likely. That's the rage in all these things, right?
Right. And, I mean, Without Remorse, for those people who don't know, it's a prequel, but it's... okay, so in the books, Clear and Present Danger, and in the movie, Clear and Present Danger, they introduce the character of Clark, who was played by Willem Dafoe in the movie. And then in Sum of All Fears, which was the reboot or whatever, the first reboot, the character shows up there too, played by Liev Schreiber. And Without Remorse was a prequel book about that character, which told his origins. So that's what Michael B. Jordan is starring in, playing that character. But he's playing the Willem Dafoe character from Clear and Present Danger.
So basically, is this character basically like Felix Leiter?
Yeah, he's kind of the Felix Leiter of the... Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, he's a cool character because, like, when you first see him in Clear and Present Danger, you're like, is he good? Is he bad? Mm-hmm. Is he, you know? And there's, like, some conflict, and then they realize that they're, you know, whatever. Yeah. So this is, like, a story. I think the original was, like, set in, like, Vietnam or something like that. Okay. And they introduced some of the other characters when they were younger as well. And, like, in this movie, Jamie Bell is playing Ritter, who is the guy played by Henry Zerny in Clear and Present Danger, where he's like, "How dare you, sir?" You know, like that. Or whatever. Maybe he was doing that to the president. I don't know. There was a lot of yelling. Like,
I think he was doing that to the president.
Okay. So this is the one where, like, he ripped he was like trying to print he hacks into the guy's computer.
Yeah.
And he prints it up and he's like, "Here." And then, you know, like, the guy's like, "I've got to get off jail free card," you know, like that. I don't know. It's I like that movie. But
I do too.
But yeah, so he's in it. You know, it's like you're going to get to see a lot of younger versions of these characters. The one interesting thing, though, too, I haven't seen anybody point this out, but in the press release, they had like a description of the movie, and it looks like they changed the character's name. Oh. His name and everything else is John Clark, and here it says that his name is John Kelly.
Hmm.
I don't know why they would do that, but...
I don't know either.
Whatever.
Okay.
So whatever. Anyway, finally coming to Prime on April 30th, about 7 or 8 months after it was supposed to be released originally. It's directed by the guy who did Sicario 2.
Okay.
Which was fine. I mean...
Okay, I didn't see Sicario 2.
I liked it. A lot of people had issues with it, which I can understand. I thought on the whole it was pretty good. Definitely not as good as the first one. But
yeah, because I really like Sicario, the first one. So
Yeah. And this movie is co-written by Taylor Sheridan, who wrote both Sicario movies as well as Wind River and what was the one with the bank robbers where, like, Chris Pine and his brother were...
I can't remember the title. I didn't see that one, but I was...
It's really good.
Yeah, okay.
Checking it out. And he does that show Yellowstone as well. Okay. So I think it seems promising. Something to look forward to.
Okay.
But, you know, we also got some actual trailers during this Super Bowl. You know, well, teaser, whatever you want to call them. The first one, I guess, which actually aired, like, slightly before the Super Bowl, was F9. Mm-hmm. The new Fast and Furious movie. And we've seen trailers. We saw, like, a really long trailer for this. This is another one where, like, I remember buying tickets for this movie back in January. but we still haven't seen it. And like, I think kind of, like, the big thing in this trailer is you see, like, a stunt where, like, a car, like, flips over and goes through a building and ends up, like, in a... And then Justin Lin, the director, like, posted, like, behind the scenes footage to show, like, how they actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
Which you'd think that would just be CGI, but
you would think, yeah.
Nope, they actually did it.
You know, I think that's my feelings on this franchise in general. They actually did it. Like, every time they come out with something, and I'm just like, I really like that. I really enjoyed myself. And it's so funny, the more of these they make, the further it gets from the very first movie. Like, it's somehow they make it work, which I think is the beauty and the charm of this franchise.
Yeah, the escalation is definitely part of the fun. I mean, I definitely am a big fan of these movies. And, like, the first one, I'm just like, whatever, it's fine. And it's like, let's race some cars, you know? And, like, the reason why I always thought that Too Fast, Too Furious was the superior movie back when there were only two of them is because it was like they were actually, like, driving cars to do something. You know,
something,
in this case,
yes.
It was like a heist, you know, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I know that they were, like, also sort of, like, on the side, they were robbing trucks, which had, I mean, this has kind of gone viral, but... what they were robbing in the first movie? Do you remember what they were stealing?
Wasn't it CDs?
No, it was a TV VHS combo machine.
Oh, man. Isn't that the same thing that somebody, wasn't it that Kathleen Keener came in to Smart Tech to buy in 40-year-old version was one of those. Or somebody came in. Yeah. I think somebody came in to buy one of those.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, and now it's like, geez, you know, everyone keeps on thinking like, oh, they're going to end up in space. You know, is it going to be this movie, you know, whatever. It's the natural progression, you know?
I mean, it has to be. Like, they have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
So, like, essentially Armageddon with them. Like, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of my favorite things about these movies is the evolution of the titles, too. Mm-hmm. Like, how are they going to, you know, I mean, it kind of reached its peak with, like, Fast Five.
Yeah.
And I was like, the next one's got to be Furious Six. They're going to do Furious Six, right? And all of the ads and everything were like Fast and Furious Six.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you, you messed it up. And then I sit down to watch the movie and... I was like screening it at work. So there were only like three of us in the theater. I was sitting next to my friend and the title comes up on screen and the title is actually Furious Six.
Yep.
I have never reacted so strongly to anything in a movie theater in my life. I literally jumped out of my seat and screamed and, you know, so Fast Nine. I mean, who knows what this one will actually be? They're calling it F9. I've heard F9, Fast and Furious. I've heard lots of variations, but someone suggested that for the next one, they need to call it Fast 10, Your Seatbelts.
Oh, man. Yes. Yes.
They've got to do it, right?
They have to. They have to.
Oh, well, we'll see. And who knows when this movie will actually come out. It's supposed to come out like May 29th. It's going to be like the next big movie after Black Widow, theoretically.
Okay.
And, you know, there was like an article, you know, where they were basically like analyzing the stuff and saying like, well, who's going to be the first to flinch? You know, who's going to move first? Mm-hmm. And
well, sure, certainly, you know, not Dom Toretto.
That's a good point. Yep. And you're probably right. I don't know. Like Disney, they had another investor call and nothing like the last one. But, you know, the question came up like, well, what are you doing with Black Widow? And they said, like, we're still committed to theatrical. You know, we're playing it by ear. We need to be flexible, but we'll see if we can, you know, release it in May, you know, still. And, you know, there's talk about it doing like a hybrid release like they're doing with Raya and the Last Dragon where... You know, you can pay the $30 to watch it on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Or you can see it in theaters. But Kevin Feige apparently is really big on releasing it in theaters. So if that means delaying it, you know, that could be the more likely scenario there. With F9, I kind of feel like in some ways they have like a better out than Black Widow does because they've got this deal in place with, you know, the major theater chains where if a movie doesn't make X amount of money, they'll release it online after essentially three weekends, like 17 days, where so that you can rent it for like $20. And I mean, maybe we're going to be at a point then where, you know, maybe a lot of people will be vaccinated. Maybe, you know, a lot of people can go to see it. And if that's not the case, then you wait another 3 weeks and it drops on you know, iTunes or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, then again, are they going to do that if they don't have New York and L.A. open? Kind of doesn't seem likely, right? So
doesn't seem likely.
We shall see. But fingers crossed. Yeah. Okay, so... Universal did release another trailer for another movie coming out later on in the summer. Old by M. Night Shyamalan. Mm-hmm. Now, which was the first look we've had at this movie. Mm-hmm. What did you think about this trailer?
Interesting, but I have a hard time trusting M. Night Shyamalan.
Okay. All right.
Because of the debacle that was The Last Airbender. I'll never forgive him for that.
that was your breaking point?
That was my breaking
everybody
point.
Everybody has a breaking point with Shyamalan, and it's always different.
Yeah, that was my breaking point, because there's no excuse for that movie to be as bad as it was. There's no excuse, especially considering that the source material that he's pulling from is perfect, and he screwed it up. He made martial arts where you can control the elements look lame. Like, what are you doing? And like, he also mispronounced the main character's name. He whitewashed it. It's just like, bruh, like, stop. Like, I can't with you. So I can't trust him. And so I'll wait to see it, but I cannot trust him.
I mean, because of, well, Unbreakable in particular, but also, you know, Sixth Sense, like, I will watch anything that he does no matter what. And I have, you know, even though things like Last Airbender, what was the one where the wind was killing people? The Happening.
I can't remember that. The Happening.
Yeah.
I was like, that was another. I was just like, bruh, no.
Yeah. I mean, like, that stuff was really bad, you know, but in recent years, he has really been on the upswing with, I mean, starting with, like, The Visit, which was great, and then Split, which was amazing. And
Split was good. I will give him that.
And my second biggest reaction in a movie theater, even though I was completely by myself when I was watching that one. And then Glass, you know, which was, I mean, I guess ultimately disappointing, but I think still a good movie, you know? So now I'm like invested in him again. You know, that being said, like, when this trailer started up, and I don't think that this is his fault. I think this is the trailer's fault, and maybe just the idea of, like, we're watching commercials during the Super Bowl, which are always, like, high concept. Mm-hmm. When it started up, like, for the first, like, basically until it said from M. Night Shyamalan, I was like, is this a joke commercial? Like, is this a, is they're pretending to be a horror movie, but it's actually going to be for, like, Tide or something like that, yeah. You know? And then it gets into, and I'm like, okay, no, this is actually, you know, M. Night Shyamalan's new movie. I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to tell. His movies are so weird that capturing them in 30 seconds, I think, is damn near impossible. So
yeah,
I'm definitely going to watch it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's terrible. But at the same time, I'll be there on opening day. So
okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay, so we didn't really get that many other trailers. There was just one for a new TV show, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there was an extended version online, which was definitely cooler. Now, what did you think about this trailer?
I liked it. The success of WandaVision is going to do a great deal of service to Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Because of the credit and the equity that's been built up now with how good WandaVision is, people are on board with Falcon and the Winter Soldier already, right? I mean, because how can they not be?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that bodes well for this show. We'll see. I can't remember what's after that one, but, you know,
I think Loki is after
Loki. Okay, so yeah. So, and if that one's good, it's that snowball. It's the desired effect. So this is, you know, the Marvel machine turning them out again, right? But it's, you know, again, whatever they're doing over there is working for them. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, it definitely looks vastly different from WandaVision, which I think is cool. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that appeals to me about WandaVision is how weird and different it is from everything else. But Falcon and Winter Soldier, I mean, You could put that up and be like, this is the next Marvel movie, and it's like, yeah, that tracks, you know?
It does. Yeah, and to your point about, like, how WandaVision is so vastly different from this, I think Loki will be different from the previous two. Right. Yeah. So I think they're setting their stuff up to where there's, like, it's not going to be mundane, right? It's not going to be just, oh, like, look, it's the same thing over and over again. I think you know, they have taken that criticism of some of their work to heart. And I think they're implementing that in this plan of theirs by making each different thing that they put out on Disney Plus, each new release, vastly different until they can get back to whatever it was they're doing on the movie side. I'm sure the movies will follow a similar blueprint, but that blueprint works for them. And so until it doesn't, like, if it ain't broke, they're not going to fix it.
One of the things that they were talking about, which is an interesting conundrum here, is you know, you can delay Black Widow for, you know, however long you need to in order to get it in theaters and people still come to see it. But you run into a problem at some point where, since this is an interconnected universe, when do you get to a point in the shows where you have to
Have it?
Yeah, like Black Widow first or whatever, yeah, you know?
Because I'm sure it's going to get to a point where they're just like, well, dang, like, Florence Pugh is supposed to make her debut as the new Black Widow, but like, right. like in the present day, but like, we have to show her origin in the past. Uh-huh. So I don't know. They'll figure it out, likely.
Because you got to figure, like, according to their plan, right? Like, at this point, we would have already seen, well, Black Widow and Eternals. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be this weekend that we would be getting the Legend of Shang-Chi, right?
Shang-Chi, or yeah.
Shang-Chi, mm-hmm. yeah. Legend of the Ten Rings, yeah. I'm sure they'll make it work.
Yeah.
Okay, so one trailer, which we didn't get until today, this morning, just mere hours ago.
Yep.
Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Indeed.
What did you think about this trailer?
It was good. But, you know, I liked the first Hallelujah trailer way better. And I was more excited for the film after that trailer than I am for after this one. This one was kind of like, I mean, that's all right. You got to see some stuff that looked new, and then some stuff in the trailer looked like Zack versions of what we saw in Justice League. And so that point got me a little less, you know, less excited, because the Hallelujah trailer, it was basically pretty much like all new stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. And this was like, well, a lot of this is stuff that I've seen before, or it's like kind of repurposed. So I was more excited after the first one. I liked the first trailer a whole lot. And that's not me trying to hate on it. That's just, you know, that's just me, you know, giving my reaction. And I do think it's funny that, you know, regardless of what you think of the trailer, the actual content of the trailer, the thing that's getting the most attention is the fact that Jared Leto said, you know, we live in a society which all the young kids who are, you know, obsessed with memes are loving. And, you know, like, regardless of what side of this you're on, that is what is getting the most attention. And that's funny for a lot of different reasons, and also concerning for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, I was not, like, aware of the meme aspect to it until, you know, someone pointed it out this morning. And I was reading up on it, and I'm like, I haven't seen anyone who's been excited about it. I've only seen people who are making fun of it.
Yes.
But, like, it... I mean, reading up on it, it's like, this is why, in my opinion, Joker is a bad movie, right? I mean, like, the portrayal...
Mike, you wore my heart so much, because I hate
it's
Joker.
Terrible.
It's so bad. It's so bad. I hate that movie so much.
It's really, really bad. And you know, a big reason is because it... In some ways, I feel like is sort of like glorifying this thing, which, you know, like, I mean, as much as I love The Killing Joke, I do see the problems with it. I do see why Alan Moore hates it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it did sort of present this character, which I guess you're supposed to feel sympathetic for, but at the same time, like, he's a terrible person, and it's sort of weird that he's become like a, I don't know, inspirational figure for people
in a lot of ways. And it's also a reflection of us and how, you know, the collective us, how, you know, like, why do you think there's so many, like, all these people, like, just like, ooh, let's watch this, you know, just this true crime drama, and they get in, it's like, oh, but then he's such a messed up person, isn't it interesting? I'm like, no, like, I don't watch it. Like, I was like, I don't want to learn about these people and get these, like, oh man, but, like, you know, he was, you know, I can understand why he did that. I was like, no, I don't want, no, that's not that's not what we're doing here. That's not what I'm about. Yeah. I you know, the whole lionization of the Joker in that, I don't get. I also don't like his overuse in media, you know, for the past 20 years or so. It's like, there are other Batman villains, yo. Like, there are other more interesting, more underrated villains than him. But yet, like, it's just like, kind of like what DC does with Batman, like, in case of emergency, they break that glass, and they do the same thing with the Joker. And there's a potential that could happen in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that he's only going to be in it for like a minute or two, you know, and it looks like it's going to be in that
nightmare sequence. Yeah,
dream sequence kind of thing. But it is really weird that they would like feed into, I mean, it's not really, I mean, it's not unexpected, but it is really weird. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
I've seen people praising it, talking about how this is, you know, expert level trolling by Sir Zack Snyder. So, I mean, I don't know if that's the deal or not. I mean, it's funny if that's what he wanted to do, but I don't know. It's just weird.
But whatever, it's getting them a lot of attention. So
sure is.
Obviously I'm still going to watch the thing. I mean, but
same.
At the same time, none of these trailers, like I don't like my big takeaway is in some shots, I'm like, I like the lens they used there. It's very good depth of focus, you know? And it's like, is that really what the takeaway is supposed to be? Because I mean, maybe the reason why I'm responding to it is because I'm like, that's an actual thing which was filmed. There's actual people standing there, and it's not just a bunch of like CGI nonsense, but most of the footage that we've seen, it's like I'm watching a Transformers movie, and I'm just like, I don't care about any of this stuff. That's why I hated Aquaman so much, because it was just a bunch of fish punching each other, and I don't have any interest in that. So
that's fair. I'm interested to see what happens with the content. Like what story is he trying to tell with these characters that I love? Because, you know, as I've mentioned before, in his previous work with these characters, I was not on board with his vision of them. So so that's what I'm curious to see what this movie does. Is it a continuation of what I didn't like, or has a change been made since he's had extra time to kind of tweak this?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I've started my DCEU rewatch. We watched Wonder Woman last week. This week is WW84. We're just going to take it through chronologically leading up to Justice League. So I'm excited to see, like, with all of it coming together and quick succession, if it maybe works better for me on some levels or not. But yeah. All right. So, you know, Joss Whedon was obviously a big reason why they've gone back and redone all this stuff, you know, basically erasing his contribution to the film.
Yes.
In this new version. But Joss Whedon's involvement with this film has also led to a number of other issues, which we've discussed. With Ray Fisher, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And now Charisma Carpenter, who worked for Joss Whedon on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel, has come out with her experiences on those shows.
Yeah.
And they're not good.
No. You know, it's just more confirmation that, you know, Joss is a creep, right? Like, and that's something that we've heard, you know, for years now, right? And we've heard lots of rumors of that. And it was always kind of countered with the fact that, like, oh, well, Joss can never be like that. He's, you know, he's a feminist, and like, he's like a self-promoted, self-claimed, self-glossed feminist. He always talked about it, right? He was always this, I'm a champion of, you know, the women and all this other stuff. But it turns out it was the exact opposite. It was just his way of, you know, trying to cover for, you know, his mistreatment of them, because as a result of Charisma Carpenter's statement, you had Sarah Michelle Gellar come out and speak out, and then so did Eliza Dushku, and so did Michelle Trachtenberg, and so...
And Amber Benson, too.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And so it's just like, yeah, I'm, you know, I believe them, and of course, hearing nothing from Joss, you know, like, the silence right there is deafening.
Yeah, and I mean, it. You know, we talked last week about how, you know, he is no longer involved with the Nevers on HBO Max, and whether or not that was, you know, involved with this, and it certainly seems like it is. And, you know, there's other people behind the scenes who have come out, you know, I think probably most notably Jose Molina, who is a writer, who was a writer on Firefly. He talked about the atmosphere in the writer's room and how terrible it was, and how, you know, as someone else described, you know, he was casually cruel and, you know, would take delight in making people cry and, you know, all that stuff. And that's obviously not a great work environment to be involved with. So,
yeah. And it's interesting that, like, haven't heard anything from, like, anybody of the, any of the Firefly class, cast, like, you know, in particular, like, you know, the women who were there, like, haven't heard anything from Marina Baccarin, haven't heard anything from Jewel State or Gina Torres. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what that was, because I remember, you know, a couple of years ago when this, you know, when this more stuff was coming out about him, Alan Tudyk seems like, well, this was not my experience, and he got a lot of flack for that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that the Firefly class has not said anything, but, you know, the Buffy and Angel crew and Dollhouse have.
Yeah. And it does line up too with the stuff that we heard about, you know, the little things that we have heard about Justice League. I think it was Kevin Smith who said that he talked to someone on the crew of both versions, and that person said that when Joss came on, he was basically making fun of everything that had been done on the original version and how bad it was, when all of the people who he was talking to, all of the people who were working on the movie, were the people who had made that original version. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, things like that. So, and it's also, you know, one of those things where, you know, for fans, it's tough, right? Because especially since, like, his work and his persona and everything, you know, he has portrayed himself as a really big feminist. And it's like, now you hear all this and it's like, well, what does that mean to you as a viewer who, you know, or something like Buffy might have meant something to you, you know, like might have meant a lot to you.
Yeah.
And now how do you recontextualize that? Which is,
well, I think you just have to watch it in the proper context. And then you also have to keep in mind that while, you know, he played a role, he was not the only person involved in the thing, right? Yeah. Like, you could still enjoy, you know, Buffy, and you can be like, yeah, he did it, but he's not the reason why I enjoy this. Like, I enjoy this for Sarah Michelle's, you know, performance. I enjoy it for, you know, I like this particular cast, like, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
There's ways you could do that. And I think a good example of that is, like, with music, for example, you know, I'm in the classical music world, Wagner. If you study Wagner in the appropriate context, he's a terrible human being. But a lot of the stuff that I have to, you know, prepare for auditions, and some of the stuff I enjoy listening to, is his stuff. And I'm not going to not acknowledge the fact that he's an awful human being, but I don't dislike the music because he is, you know, he wrote it. I like the music because it's cool and I like playing it, but I'm not doing it for the glorification of him, if that makes any sense. Yeah. So I think that's one way to kind of, and you can kind of try to set your mind at ease about it.
Yeah.
Charisma, of course, in her piece, she mentions, you know, like, she stands with Ray Fisher. And this brings, you know, with him, it's interesting that, like, he's yet to produce any details of what happened the way that, like, she did or other people who have come at Joss have. He still says a whole lot without saying anything. And he's going to have people on his side. So I don't understand why he just doesn't come out and say whatever, what happened. And I think that's what is confusing to me about his situation. Cause it's like, bro, you will have the benefit of the doubt, especially considering everything else that's going on. And if you look at the world around us, like, I think people are going to be inclined to believe you. Just come out and say whatever. Cause he's going through a lot of hoops to make his case and do his point. But, like, you know, he probably would have had an easier time if he just went to the internet and said, look, this is what Joss Whedon said and did.
I wonder, because he did say, like, part of it was protect, like, not naming names, like, protecting others, you know, so who knows, like, how many things happened would not implicate, but would, you know, essentially out, like, other people who may not want to be outed, you know.
Sure.
But I'm also wondering if there might be some sort of, like, NDA thing at play where, you know, people making Buffy and stuff like that, like, that's decades ago, you know, and they might be a bit freer to talk about what was going on than, you know, someone who's got, like, a new version of that movie coming out in a few weeks. But yeah, I mean, who knows exactly? But I mean, one of the things which was kind of interesting is Charisma Carpenter said that the reason why she came out now was because Ray Fisher had been fired from Flash, mm-hmm. you know, and she's like, I can't believe that this would happen, right? I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, so that was like one of the reasons why she said what she said, you know, when she did. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, this isn't going to like change. They're not going to be like, oh, you know, sorry, you were right. You want to be in Flash? And he's going to be like, yeah, you know, like that's not going to happen. But
yeah, because they're probably not even going to make the Flash movie.
you think that might be just gone? I don't know.
What's happened with that movie? Like it's been in production for how long now?
I heard they were going to start shooting in like May or something like that.
It's never going to happen.
Well, yeah, who knows?
I have zero faith in that movie.
Yeah.
We'll be on Flash season 9 on the CW before that movie starts its day one.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's a crazy situation all the way around. It just, it sucks. Mm-hmm. So speaking of people who are being fired for being terrible to other people, Gina Carano is no longer involved with Star Wars.
That's correct.
This is one of those things where it was like a long time coming, you know, months mm-hmm. and months ago. I think back before season 2 started, she was posting things on social media which were, you know, transphobic and, you know, anti-masking and, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just recently, well, I mean, I guess it was just last week, right?
Yeah.
That she posted stuff on social media, which was rather anti-Semitic, comparing people, I don't know, chastising other people on Twitter for their political views to the Holocaust.
Not others for political, it's to be more specific, for people chastising conservatives specifically.
Yeah.
The whole argument that we hear a lot of the times, like, you know, the free country, you know, like you hear that type of stuff. It's like, yeah, you can do what you want, but that doesn't mean that you're free of consequences, right? Yeah. And so, and I think that's the thing that people miss. And like, you just can't pop off the mouth and think that you can just get away with it. And I guess, you know, she thought that she could, and there's some inherent privilege in involved in that. This is probably the first time in history that a collection of certain individuals with a certain ideology are not getting what they want and they don't like it. I don't really necessarily have any sympathy. You should be more professional, right? And you should be able to read the room a little bit better. Your stance, and especially if it's an outlandish one, and you know it's outlandish, like, you can't just keep, you know, banging on that drum and think that, A, no one's going to listen, and B, nothing's going to happen to you, right? You're not untouchable.
Yeah, and you know, also, just to be clear, like lots of people have pointed out, like, this isn't about her being conservative, right?
Yes.
Like a lot of people have been saying, like, nobody is getting fired for their views on tax reform, you know, or things like that.
That's correct.
It's for being, you know, transphobic and you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, if I'm Pedro Pascal, right, mm-hmm. you know, who has a trans sister.
Yes.
And I see someone, one of my coworkers, you know, making fun of pronouns, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to want to work with them either.
Yeah. And from you know, from what I've read, like, they had a conversation about it, like, when she first did it, and, like, he explained, like, he was like, look, this is what, and she, because I remember, like, that was one of her, like, I guess, early apologies. It's like, she's like, I'm not going to, you know, make fun of this again. It's like, it seemed like she maybe might have learned a lesson at that point, but.
Mm-hmm. And Disney, they released a statement saying, like, she's not currently employed by us and we have no plans to employ her in the future. However, you know, and then they took it a step further and were like, you know, what she was posting was abhorrent, you know, mm-hmm. and they made it very clear that, you know, that's not something that they're down with. I mean, the other thing about it is it does seem like they were taking a wait and see approach to this whole thing, because, I mean, I think what everyone is assuming that one show that they announced in their investor day, mm-hmm. was it like Rangers of the Republic or something like that. Like, everyone assumed, like, that was going to be Gina Carano's show. Mm-hmm. And a report has come out that they were planning on announcing that that show or a show was going to star Gina Carano.
Yeah.
And they decided not to do that after all this happened the first time around. And, you know, now obviously that's not happening at all. But it'll be interesting to see just from a creative standpoint how they get around that. I mean, one of the, I guess, kind of convenient things about Mandalorian is that it's very transient, you know, or whatever. Like he's going from planet to planet, not really looking back. Like to the point that like when you do see some of these characters like Cara Dune in season two, you're like, really? Like this really feels like you're just kind of trying to get these characters back. Like, would he really be going back to this place? You know? So moving forward without her, I don't think is really going to be that much of a challenge aside from whatever grand plans they had to begin with.
I agree.
But I mean, I do have to say that like as a viewer watching season two after all of this stuff had come out, you know, the first time around, every time she came up on screen, I was kind of like, I don't really want to deal with this. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, her character was cool, but she was, you know, she wasn't the reason why I was watching the show. Yeah. So again, like, you know, that's how I could kind of distance her from my enjoyment, right? I didn't let her put a damper or a sour on it. And I know there are some people out there who are, you know, kind of lamenting the fact, because like, or they're just like, oh, well, way to go, Disney. You just got rid of a strong female character, blah, blah, blah. Like they're thinking like, that's like a gotcha. But like, she wasn't the only one on the show. Like,
no.
Like, come on.
I mean, you could also create more, you know? I mean, there's not true. Like a, there's not like a quota or something, you know, or a limit to this. So, yeah. But hey, the very next day, Gina Carano landed on her feet with a
Are
new...
Are you sure she landed on her feet?
I mean, she says she did, you know?
I'd say she landed on a different body part. Especially considering who she's about to work with.
Yes, she's making a movie. She's developing, producing, and starring in a new movie for The Daily Wire, produced by Ben Shapiro, who is another transphobe who said that being gay or trans is a mental illness. So I'm sure that's going to be a fun set to work on. And I'm sure that whatever movie they end up producing is going to be something fantastic, which I'll never watch.
Great.
Well, best of luck or whatever.
Best of luck, sort of. Not really.
Not really. Okay, moving on. Judd Apatow is making a new movie at Netflix with Pedro Pascal, by the way. You know, so it's good to see that.
Life could be good, but it could be better.
Yep. So this movie, it sounds pretty interesting to me, actually, because it's loosely based on the recent production of Jurassic World Dominion, in which production was shut down because of the pandemic, and then it started back up with all the actors working in A Bubble, which is the name of the movie. It's called The Bubble. And
so it's, you know, about the NBA?
No. It's about the Jurassic World bubble.
I'm joking.
Yes. The NBA's bubble actually worked.
Right? I know, right? And the WNBA.
The Jurassic World bubble, not quite as well. The production was shut down a few times because of positive COVID tests or whatever. And this is what that movie is going to be about. While it's a fictionalized version, it's going to be about a franchise movie, which is shut down because of the pandemic and then continues filming during the pandemic with everyone living in this hotel, including, you know, the two stars of the franchise, played by Pedro Pascal and Karen Gillan, and like David Duchovny and Leslie Mann are going to be in it as two actors who used to be married.
Of course, Leslie Mann's going to be in this.
Of course she is, you know, but hey, I can't complain about that because she's awesome. And so is David Duchovny. And, you know, so they're stuck in the hotel together, even though they're divorced and everything. And I mean, it sounds like a pretty solid concept for a movie, if you ask me.
Okay.
And Judd Apatow is solid. I mean, King of Staten Island, whatever, was fine, you know, but, you know, going back to things like Knocked Up and everything and
yeah.
Funny People, This Is 40.
Yeah.
It's all pretty good.
I agree. So. It's funny. When I watched King of Staten Island, I'd forgotten when I was in the middle of watching, I'd forgotten that it was an Apatow movie because I was distracted by other things. And then I was like, oh, yeah, this is an Apatow film.
Yeah. So Brad Pitt and Sandra Bullock, they've never made a movie together.
Crazy.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
Well, it's changing now. Excellent. They are making a movie together. It's called Bullet Train. And it's directed by David Leitch, who did Hobbs and Shaw and Deadpool 2 and, you know, Atomic Blonde and all that stuff. So it sounds like it's going to be a big action extravaganza. It's based on a book which is about, I guess, numerous assassins or hitmen or whoever who are on a train together, on a bullet train together in Japan. So I don't know exactly how this story is going to change from that, but it sounds like a solid concept. Mm-hmm. Cast, I mean, hey, Bullock and Pitt together again for the first time. It sounds like a cinema gold.
You know, the only thing that will make this better is if when the title pops up on the screen, right in front of Bullet Train, it has the following things. Speed 3 : Bullet Train.
Hey, that could work, right?
Like, let's do it.
Yeah, why not? I mean, Speed 2 Cruise Control. That was a hit, right?
Somewhat, yeah.
The thing about Speed 2, which it's like you could tell, obviously, that the Jason Patrick role was written for Keanu Reeves, and then yes. Keanu Reeves left. But it's like the idea that, like, Sandra Bullock would be in this situation again.
Uh-huh.
Like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Yes. Fun fact, my family and I, we were living in Los Angeles when we had that earthquake that brought down that part of the freeway that they filmed on.
Mm. So they actually did, it's not that they, like, something was under construction or whatever, it's like something broke and yeah. They were like, let's take advantage of this.
Yes.
Ah, fascinating. That was a great sequence.
I know. Yeah.
That was one of those things that they would teach you in physics, and they're like, today we're going to watch Speed, and we're going to show you why it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. It's a great movie. It's a masterpiece. So, Brad Pitt, you know, playing a hitman, this isn't the first time.
Nope.
You know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, fantastic mm-hmm. movie. Mm-hmm. And at one point, they were going to do this as a TV show. Like, Doug Liman, the director of the movie, was going to do it as a TV show, and they shot a pilot with Jordana Brewster.
Jordana Brewster?
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah, she was in it and everything, but it never made it off the ground,
That's
made it to air.
A shame.
Yeah, it would have been cool.
I would have been all about that show.
It's a great concept for a show, you know? And hey, but luckily... Mm-hmm. They're trying it again.
Okay.
And this time, Mr. and Mrs. Smith will be played by Donald Glover and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who are also producing it.
This is really interesting and yeah. Really cool.
Yeah, especially when you think about how they've already been an on-screen couple. They've already had a romance.
Yeah.
In Solo, a Star yeah. Wars story.
Exactly.
And
it's a prequel.
There you go. Hey, I'm all for this. I love Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I just watched it again the other day for a podcast over on Talk Film Society at Pod to Be You. Check it out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, great cast. I mean, not to mention the fact that, you know, behind the scenes, like, they're both A-list writers themselves and everything. Mm-hmm. And
incredibly funny,
involved.
Incredibly talented.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer. This is going to be a hit.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hit. Yeah. It's going to be on Amazon Prime. Who knows when? Another show which they're rebooting is The 4400. Did you watch The 4400?
Never watched The 4400. I always saw trailers for it, though, because it was always like either on right before something I was about to watch, or I saw trailers for it while watching other things on the network.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good, and honestly, I think that you would like it a lot. It's the original show. It was run by Ira Stephen Bear, who did Deep Space Nine, and he brought on. It was actually created by another Deep Space Nine writer, Rene Echevarria, and he like left to do something else. So Bear came on, and he brought on a lot of his Deep Space Nine people with him to do this. And you know, the concept for the show, it's pretty straightforward. Like, over the past 50 years or something like that, 4,400 people have randomly gone missing. You know, no connection or whatever. It's just they've been missing people. Then one day in the present, you know, 2003, I think in that case, all 4,400 of these people just reappear in like Seattle, just all together, none of them having aged a day, right? So there's some which have been gone for a year, and it's like, oh, you know, what did I miss in the past year? But there's others who have been gone for 50 years. Like Mahershala Ali is in it. He played a character who was like a soldier in World War II when he disappeared. You know, so now he comes back and he's like, this is completely different. Like, you know, like there's a scene where like, And they do this weird thing there. Well, it doesn't matter. They do a weird thing where, like, he was dating this woman, and then she died, and now he's dating his granddaughter or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, anyway, Captain America's it.
Yeah, it's a little, but there's this scene, which I always remember, where he's like, that movie was amazing. I've never seen anything like that. Those visual effects. The screen. I've never seen a screen that big. This is insane, you know? I'm like that's how I would relate to him as
that's funny.
Being gone for 50 years. But it was a really good show, and it's cool that it's coming back. It looks like this is going to be a reboot. I mean you could do a sequel, but I don't know. Oh, and the other thing about it, they all come back and they also all have superpowers. So
there's that too.
a little minor thing which I kind of just forgot. Yeah, they all have superpowers.
Okay.
So yeah, it's really cool. But I'm glad that they're bringing it back. This is another one where they tried to reboot it a couple years ago with Craig Sweeney, who was a writer on the original show and has since gone on to do like Limitless, and he's doing that Section 31 show and stuff. But I guess that didn't work. So now they're trying again with the team that does Riverdale. Okay. So, I think it could be good.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Cool.
Another show is getting a reboot as part of HBO Max's cartoon lineup. Clone High, which was Lord and Miller's original thing. This is the first thing that they ever did.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's coming back for two more seasons. Did you watch Clone High?
I never did.
Me either. Yeah.
I knew it was a thing, but it was just I never got into it.
Everybody talks about how great it is, and you know, I'm sure it's one of those things where if I watched it, I'd love it, but I've just never seen it. But a lot of people from the original series are coming on to work on this, including Lord and Miller. Okay. So that could be cool. Another show, which is an original, is Velma, which is going to be a Velma origin story with Mindy Kaling voicing Velma.
Cool.
But it's going to be an adult show. So
yeah, it figures.
So that works.
Yeah, so it's funny, like Velma in pop culture has taken on like this new energy, right, in the past at least 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. Because like growing up, like Velma was, you know, like, oh, jinkies, I'm the nerdy girl. But like there's been it's taken a turn. I'll say that much. Yeah. And that's as far as I'm going to go. It's taken a turn in recent years. And so it figures that this is going to be an adult show. And then it also figures that she's involved. The person involved, it's the pairing matches and it fits what the character kind of represents now.
Yeah. I saw some, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter. Someone was like, I'm really into the idea of a Velma origin story, but you know, Mindy Kaling doing the voice, and then they put that gif from The Office where it's like Steve Carell going like, no, no, no. And then she responded and she said, I wrote the episode
of
that gif.
Exactly. I saw, yeah. Like, put some respect on her name.
It's pretty good. Now, yeah. The other one, the one out of all these shows, which really, really does intrigue me because I don't know anything about it, is Cover, which is based on a DC...
Is that the Bendis show?
Yeah. It's okay. Based on a comic book series by Bendis and David Mack, who obviously have teamed up many times over the years. But this is going to be an adaptation of that Bendis is writing and Mack is directing.
Yeah.
That seems pretty cool.
Yeah, that piqued my interest. So I will definitely, that'll definitely be on my radar.
Have you read Cover?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, they say an animated espionage thriller and conspiratorial love letter to the comic book industry.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I need to read that. Bendis, I think, is probably consistently like my favorite comic book writer, at least of like the big two.
But, okay.
I haven't read any of his DC stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm holding off, but I'm going to get that Infinite app, and then
okay,
but I feel like I've got some comics here that I need to read first. I need to finish Strangers in Paradise, and then I feel like I need to read all of Justice League International, and then I'll move on to the DC Infinite app. So,
cool.
So speaking of DC reboots and everything, it looks like the Milestone reboot is a bit delayed, huh?
Yeah, and that's that is a failing on their part because that should have been what they kicked off this month with. And I'm also kind of disappointed that they're only miniseries. Like they're 6-issue miniseries for those titles for Static, you know, Rocket and Icon and Hardware. Like it's just 6 issues. I was like, well, that's like after all this time, that's all you're going to do.
And they're digital only too.
It's like, what is this?
And it looks like it looks like they're changing their plans or something because like they announced a bunch of creative teams.
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, we're going to reannounce the creative teams soon. Like what's going on? It's strange.
DC, man, like I love you, but you cause me so much stress.
I mean, it sounds like Static is the closest to coming. I think they said April for that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, at least that's not too far of a...
No, but still, like, it's like you announce this at FanDome.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the middle of Black History Month, you're just like, oh, these books are delayed. And then it's also announced that they're not even going to get long runs. They're just miniseries. It's like, so what's going to happen after the miniseries? Are you just going to put them back on the shelf and then not have them around anymore? Are we going to get physical, you know, releases of, you know, graphic novels of collections of the past Milestone stuff? Are we going to get an omnibus of those things? Like, is any of that going to happen? I mean, I could tell you the answer, the likely answer.
It is disappointing, especially since it seems like there was a lot of momentum building with you know, and it seems like a no brainer too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, Static Shock has a big following, you know, on the animated series or whatever. So mm-hmm. Static, it seems like just a logical character to reintroduce in comics, and then make a movie out of, right?
Yes. Uh huh. But as we've learned with Miles Morales, it's not happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully when it does come out in April, it'll have big sales and they'll pursue it more.
I hope so.
So Paranormal Activity, are you a fan of that franchise?
I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but have I watched them? Yes. And I enjoy them.
I think I've watched the first two, and I thought they were fine. It's like there's only so far that you can take that that concept. You know, it's like, oh, something moved in the house. What was it? Set up a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, something moved again. Okay, then let's spend the next 20 minutes talking about this, and then we'll set up the camera again. And then and it's like by the time you get to the end.
Let's make sure we kill off the black person first.
Yeah, I mean, it's like what's going on in this? It's an interesting concept, especially the first one where they're like they made it for no money and this is what they came up with. But well, the guy who wrote the the next four movies, believe it or not, everything except the first one, is Christopher Landon. I didn't realize this, and he directed the last one himself. He is the director of the Happy Death Day movies. And
see, I love those.
Yeah, they're great. And and Freaky as well, which just came out.
Okay.
And he is writing the next installment, which is being described by some as a reboot, but I think the official title is Untitled Paranormal Activity Sequel, so who knows what that means. And it's going to be directed by Will Eubank, who is the director of that movie that just came out, Underwater. Mm-hmm. It's not very good, but whatever. It's an interesting, because like these things are usually done cheap. They're usually directed by like up and coming filmmakers, and here they are getting someone who is like an established name already,
yeah,
to make another Paranormal Activity movie. So what does that mean for the franchise? I don't know. Probably not much, but could be interesting. Yeah.
We'll see.
Now, a sequel, which I am really looking forward to, which is also coming from Paramount, is Face Off. They announced that Adam Wingard, who is the director of Godzilla vs. Kong, in addition to Your Next and The Guest and the Blair Witch sequel thing that came out a few years ago, he is going to be directing it. Now, initially, they were like, oh, he's rebooting it. And I was like, that's funny, because people who love Face Off also love Adam Wingard, but those two groups of people hate remakes, right?
Yeah.
So this seems like a no-win scenario for them. But then Adam Wingard got on Instagram and was like, no, 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 I would never remake Face Off.
Not so fast, my friends.
It's going to be a direct sequel. So I can't exactly remember how, like, the Nicolas Cage character dies at the end of that, right?
I think
I'm
so.
I'm assuming he has
It's been a while since I've seen Face Off.
Yeah, I need to rewatch it, but so you could bring back John Travolta, but unless there's something where like he needs to go undercover and wear Nicolas Cage's face again. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the report, which incorrectly labeled it as a reboot, also said that, you know, there was going to be like new young cast and everything like that. So who knows exactly what they'll do with it. I mean, it could be their kids or whatever.
That'd be funny.
But I'm down with it, because Face Off is a cool movie. I'm not as in love with it as the rest of the world, but I do think it's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So. Fair enough.
All right. So, you know, we didn't do this up at the front of the episode, but I need to ask, what's going on with The Bachelor?
Whew, man. The Bachelor has had itself a week. Unfortunately, on Monday's episode, my girl Katie did not get a rose. She got picked for a one-on-one, but then she did not get the rose at the one-on-one. She got broke off, and I was like, dang, that's hardcore. That's probably the thing on the show that I disagree with. It's like, if you're going to take them on the one-on-one and you're not going to give them the rose, that's fine. But don't pick up the rose, hold it out, and start talking. And then be like, and I cannot give you this rose. I know it's done for TV, but that is cold blooded. Like,
yeah, that's pretty harsh.
Like,
yeah.
Come on, man. And you know, some of the other one of the other contestants was trying to start some mess with her, and I'm sure she's excited that she's no longer, you know, part of the show. They did add that other new girl. I can't even remember her name, but she was on a past season also. But is friends with, but already knows Matt, because I don't know. It's weird. But that's not even the big thing. So this week, though, like a couple of days ago, there are rumors about Rachel, who I mentioned on last show was a, you know, had kind of moved up the leaderboard, right? Especially after her one-on-one, her fancy one-on-one that she had with Matt. And it turns out that she had some racist skeletons in her closet. Like she, you know, there are pictures of her at an Old South party when she was in college, where they basically, you know, celebrated the good old days of the South, and it was held at like a plantation, and they wore, you know, Gone with the Wind style getup and all that stuff. And it was just like, that's a bit problematic. And then so, and she released an apology, you know, couple days ago, which by the standards of these apologies that happen in this industry, right? That's probably the best one that I've heard, and probably the one that actually seemed the most sincere. Now, Chris Harrison, however, on the other hand, was defending her in his interview in his TV short TV spot earlier in the week on Extra, where he was interviewed by the first Black Bachelorette who hosts that show, Rachel Lindsay. And, you know, he was going off about like, it was like, well, we need to give her some grace, and we need to, you know, like, we don't know what was happening. She was young. She was having a good time, blah, 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 blah. And all this other stuff. And he's like, you know, I know the woke police are after her and all this other stuff. And it's like, Chris, come on, man. And so then, of course, he had to, and then his apology that came out was super, super tone deaf. And it's just like, nah, man, this is not it. And so as a result, he's going to be, after this season concludes, he's going to take some time off and reevaluate. He's stepping aside from his role as host of The Bachelor. It's like, dang. So the franchise has had a week. And I think that the reason why this has been such a big deal, and why I guess such great lengths were made to, you know, protect Rachel Kirkconnell, who's the current contestant, is because she probably lasts like to the end, like, mm-hmm. or like she's probably one of the top four. I think she makes it to hometowns, right? Because all this stuff is the show's already been filmed and everything, so she probably lasts pretty long. I don't want to say that she wins because she's not who I think he's going to pick. Yeah. But I do think that she's in the top four, top three for sure.
Yeah.
Based on what I've seen in the show. So we shall see.
Hmm. Oh, boy. Drama on top of drama.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, did you see anything else good this week?
Honestly, not really. It's been a busy week, and then there's just been other stuff. Some of which we covered, and other wits is just other stuff. So not this week.
Yeah.
How about you?
I saw a bunch of stuff, a bunch of the Oscar things and all that stuff. I would say that the thing which probably stood out to me more than anything else is that new documentary Framing Britney Spears, which is on Hulu, which everyone's talking about.
Lots of people are talking about that.
Yeah. It was really good, you know, and certainly paints the early aughts in a very interesting light, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy to think that that was only like 15 years ago, 17 years ago.
Yes.
But, I mean, I've always been a Britney Spears fan, but boy, yeah, she was treated rather poorly by the media and everyone else. And mm-hmm. yeah, this whole movement seems very justified. She got completely screwed over, and
yeah,
it's crazy to think that this is still going on today. So mm-hmm. anyway, check it out. It's under like the New York Times Presents TV show. So check it out. It's worth a watch for sure.
Gotcha.
So Lance, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias. And they can find me also on the United Federation of Podcasts, talking about all the things that make Arrow Arrow on my show, Always Hold On to Arrow. You can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. And you can also find me on my website, filmdamagepod.com, doing a show called Film Damage. And you can find me currently on talkfilmsociety.com, doing a show called Trek Film Society. Check those out. All right. Well, that's it for this week. So until next week, watch some movies.
Yeah.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.